Aviation Quest to Sea 101, wind 270 degrees, 10 knots, runway 27 left, cleared for takeoff.
Aviation Quest CC 101, cleared for takeoff, 27 left. V1, rotate. Positive climb.
Aviation Quest CC, stories from above. The views shared in this podcast are personal and for informational purposes only. They do not reflect any employer or aviation authority, and nothing discussed here should be considered flight training or regulatory guidance. Please always refer to official sources. This episode may also contain product placements. For further information, visit our website aviation-quest.cc.
This is a very special episode of Aviation Quest CC. It's the 23rd one, and I'm your host, Jürgen Reiss, and there certainly is my second host today, first officer of an Airbus A320, Stefan on the other side. Hi, Stefan.
Hey, Jürgen. How's it going? All okay?
Yeah, this is so to say, a coupled sentence, because the sentence ends with today we have even a captain on board.
Exactly, yes. So three of us in the cockpit.
Yeah, it's our guest today is Captain Gerhard Gruber, a pilot, aviation manager, safety expert, and one of Austria's most experienced and respected aviation professionals. Yeah, I think, Stefan, your take on that. I think it was quite an honor to have an interview with him.
Yes, absolutely. Very interesting man with a very interesting career. A lot of different experiences within the industry. So very, very interesting to listen to everything he is talking about.
Yeah, born in May 1954. And yeah, we will hear it anyway, but yeah, started officially, so to say, after aviation childhood in 1970. And 45 years at the airport Vienna. And in 54 years, 10,000 hours in the air, certainly without any accident. I think that's quite amazing, Stefan. You got some goals.
yes, really interesting, especially since it's so varied. It's not your typical airliner career, very, very varied. Very different roles he has occupied with different experiences. So yeah, I really enjoyed listening to it. It was very nice.
Yeah, he did also a really thorough check on us beforehand. Stefan, I told you about it and you understood. I mean, this interview was recorded by the end of January 2026, and we are still a really small platform. But back then we were even smaller than this. And before I forget, one of the most important things is certainly a big shout out to our float plane enthusiast and flight instructor Christoph Barshevsky. He made this connection happen and also indirectly certainly this interview happened. It was, I mean, certainly I also had to ask, Gerhard asked a couple of questions what it's all about, and there was some emails going back and forth beforehand, but after all he accepted. And Christoph, the reason why I was even able to get in touch with Captain Gerhard Gruber was you and the aviator.at. This is Christoph's homepage where you find his books. And yeah, and I mean, in the same, I think I can also put this in front of the interview. I will tell it afterwards anyway, one more time. But Captain Gerhard Gruber's books, so Gerhard's books, can be found on photogruber.eu, and this is his family name. And in front of this, it's in one word, it's the German word of photo. That's Foxtrot Oscar Tango Oscar. And then, as I said, Gruber and .eu. So that's Echo Uniform. But well, Stefan, without any further ado, what do you think? Should we start into the show and talk afterwards a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. I think we should go straight into it. And we shouldn't delay it any longer. So I hope...
Captain Engineer Gerhard Gruber, welcome to Aviation Quest CC. You are a professional aviator, engineer, consultant, and speaker with a career that spans decades across multiple disciplines of aviation. It's certainly a great honor to have you with us. Thank you, Gerhard.
Yeah, many thanks, Jürgen, for inviting me to talk about my career.
Yeah, to begin it very simple. What are you personally focusing on right now in your professional life, Gerhard?
Oh, I'm busy like hell. I'm busy with aviation every day, sitting on flight simulators in Europe, writing book about my aviation stories, working for the court as an witness, expert, being a member for the Accident Investigation Bureau of Austria, yeah, etc., etc. And, yeah, beside the aviation, I'm also a professional photographer, mobile DJ, drone pilot, yeah, something else.
Seems a lot of aviation career with many hats. And speaking of books, Gerhard, in Unglaubliche Luftfahrtgeschichten, Band 2, meine Erlebnisse. We have something in common. We both started our real-world aviation career, so to say, as glider pilots, and we both were too light in body weight, so to say. So,
Made
you also creative. No, what this question is already leading to, you're a professional speaker, and I want this podcast a little bit of your life. Let's go to the early beginnings as a glider and let's, don't know, somehow connect it to the present if this is possible in 30 minutes. But let's get started.
Yeah, it's, we can mention it quite easy. There was nothing else than aviation in my life. I skipped every wishes for any other professions. All my guys in the primary school, for instance, they talked about to be a driver for trains or a policeman or a firefighter, etc. Yeah, nothing happened to me. I was always focused on aviation. I can't remember doing everything else. When I was young, for instance, 6, 7 years old, I started with model planes. I was always looking to the birds because I was enthusiastic observer of bird flying, and I was amazed about how they could manage it.
And finally, in the glider, you even had to put some tools, some manual labor tools, into the sandbag. Or what was this? To be in the right weight, so to have the center of gravity in the right position. Let's say like this.
Yeah, I had to manage around to have the right weight, as required by the weight and balance diagram. So my instructor for the glider pilot license told me, hey, Gerhard, you have to look for some ballast. And I was looking around what I had at home. I found a plastic bag and I filled in some sand. And then I jumped on the measurement unit looking to my weight and it was still not enough. So I was looking around in our garden in the house and I found some hammers and some metal tools. So I put everything else in the sand and then I had the right weight and I could start my career as a glider student pilot.
As I said, this was so to say the common factor in our bio, but certainly my real-world aviation career ended, so to say, license-wise after the upgrade to the motor glider pilot, and you took off certainly in a professional sense. So how did it went on from glider school?
Yeah, the first step I did after the basic glider license, I started with a touring motor glider. It was quite easy during that time. We had a Scheibe Motorfalke, 25. It was already the advanced model with the electric starter, because the model before, you had this with the hand grip to start the engine. So this was my first step. And then the next logic step was the private pilot license. And I was always looking around, what can I do with my license? And there were a lot of empty lines in my license to fill it up. For instance, the radio telephony permission, acrobatics, night visual flying, instrument flying, etc., etc. So I did it on, for instance, acrobatic. I did it as well as in the glider, as also in the private pilot license.
And in the year I was born, in 1976, you earned another license. You became flight instructor.
Yes, during that time I was the youngest flight instructor in Austria. Initially, the organizer of that course in Kapfenberg in Styria, he wanted to get rid of me and said, okay, you are not allowed to sit in the course because you are too young. And yeah, it was a 10-minute discussion, and then, thanks God, I convinced him that I could stay in the course. It was a 2-week course. Then we went back home to prepare for the exam. Then we had another couple of days preparation for the exam, and then I did the exam, and then I was the youngest flight instructor for private pilots. And also included in that was because I had the acrobatic license, so then I was also automatically flight instructor for acrobatics.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes and no. It was great.
But also sometimes, I was just thinking, a little bit tricky, huh, with the students.
Oh, yes, especially with the aircraft we flew. The aircraft, they were not that powerful. I flew with Bilanka, Decathlon, Bilanka, Citabria. And you're sitting behind the student pilot. So when something happened and you had to wind out with the parachute from the aircraft, the first action would have been that the student pilot jumps out. If that stays in the seat, you had no jump from the rear seat to get out of the aircraft.
But this is just, so to say, a conditional scenario. This didn't happen.
Ah, fortunately not. Otherwise, I couldn't speak about that.
Making me anxious here. No, you never had to jump out of an aircraft with a parachute, hadn't you?
No. I was thinking about, but when I started to drop off parachute jumpers from the aircraft, I had a lot of flying with them, and then I saw what happened. Then I stopped my idea to do it myself, and I came up to my policy, which is valid until now: never ever jump out from a working aircraft.
yeah, parachuting, another profession, but you made your child dream, so to say, your career. So what was the next step after flight instructing?
The next step was the commercial pilot license with instrument and multi-engine type rating. And immediately after that, I also did the flight instructor for the commercial pilot license. And so that was a big step forward, because that brought me into the position of doing twin engine flights in Europe, because I had a lot of student pilots who used the training also for their business flights. We flew up to Amsterdam, Shannon, etc., in whole Europe with all that guys. And that was really important for the next step of my career, because with that flight, I collected a lot of flight hours, and that gave me the opportunity then to become manager of flight operations in my first commercial air traffic air transport operation.
Which means in Austria, you were, I got here the bio on your homepage. So you were a pilot for Lauda Air Executive, or was this later on?
This was later on. The first commercial flying was actually in a single engine aircraft. We did some city flights around Vienna and in the close vicinity. The maximum distance was going around the highest mountain in Austria, the Großglockner. It was a single engine aircraft, fixed gear. We had 6 passenger seats. Yeah, it was definitely funny having the people, most of them never flew before, and for some of them it was the only flight in their life. We had starting from young school kids up to elderly grandmas. It was unbelievable. And that company later on also became 2 twin engine aircraft. One was the Cessna 421, and the other one was the Piper Aerostar, also a twin engine aircraft.
And there was this, you are, so to say, you are EASA and FAA ATPL pilot. So put me the dots a little bit together of your CV. I have the facts, but I'm missing out. So maybe put dots together up to this Lauda Air Executive. This is, I don't know, okay, there was okay. So much going on. I know there are decades between this, but for a podcast, can we maybe get the highlights done there? It's so complicated, yeah. Because there were so many roles. You are wearing so many hats in aviation. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, let's figure out. The first step, it was the company Tonaflug with the twin engine aircraft. The next step was on a Citation. It was a company Wiener Polsterer Jets. And because of the flights and the flight hours I had with the twin engine aircraft, I was able to get the role of the manager of flight operations. Mm-hmm. And by the way, EASA and JAR was still far away during that time, because that was in the 80s. It was 1986 something. Yeah. And then I did my first jet type rating. I became the manager of flight ops and chief pilot of Vienna Polsterer Jets. And we did it for almost 10 years. At the end, we had 12 jets, including the first Bombardier aircraft in Austria. It was a Challenger 601.
Wow.
I picked it up from the factory in Montreal.
Yeah.
And delivered it to Austria. So I was also the first Bombardier pilot in Austria. All that CRJ and all the other pilots in Lauda Air and Tyrolean, etc., they came later on with their Bombardiers. And it was a great aircraft. It was the biggest aircraft in Austria for business flights. And we did a lot of flights. Even crossing the North Atlantic, which was easy with that aircraft. It was a long-range business jet.
May I ask you, Gerhard, on how many jets were you type-rated, or aircraft after all, current type-rated back then? Must be quite a few, huh?
Oh, yes. I had one time in my aviation career when the licenses were converted to the JAR system and later on to the EASA. there was one moment in my life when I had 9 type ratings in my license, in addition to the single engine, multi engine, and touring motor glider. So that was definitely too much.
So it was. It were, I guess, mid-range, long-range business jets. And what were the highlights? Which one were your favorites?
At the end, I loved the Challenger because it has a lot of space in the cockpit. It's and also the same design philosophy like Boeing 737. And on the other hand, it was the Falcon 900 I liked a lot, because the two aircraft, there's quite a difference between them. The Challenger, you fly them like a truck. No slats and high-speed wing, critical wing. And on the other hand, the Falcon 900 with the slats and with the 3 engines, you flew that with 2 fingers. That was like a lady.
Yeah, and then from the company you flew, was there a management role between this? But back to the Lauda Air Executive, I think this was also a quite exciting phase of your career. Huh?
Yeah. The reason I joined Lauda Air was because they got a Challenger and they required me as a pilot to bring the Challenger from Tyler Airport, that is one of the smaller airports in Texas, to deliver that to Austria, to Vienna. And that was the reason I flew for about 10 years also for Lauda Air. And I have to say, all my jobs, they were a little bit overlapping. I flew for 4 or 5 companies simultaneously. And I also have to mention, my flying was just my second job, because my primary job was at the Vienna Airport. I was working at the Vienna Airport since 1974. I was there until 2019, 45 years. And 30 years out of that, I was the manager airport operations and manager rescue operations. So, basically, I run the airport.
I think listeners now figure out why I struggle a little bit with getting your CV straight here. Because everything is sort of kind of overlapping.
This is just,
it's just too many jobs to get. It's amazing. It's just amazing. How did you manage this? Was there also with the work-life balance, was there something like this? Must have been.
I always have the question to myself, how could I manage that? And when someone asking me, my answer is always, you didn't find me in a bar or a restaurant, or I was always in the air. During that time, maximum duty time, was not so in focus as it is now. For instance, I did a lot of flying in the night, for instance, ambulance flights. Came back home at 6 o'clock in the morning. Went home, took a shower, and then at 8 o'clock, I was sitting in the office at Vienna Airport. And no one had any clue what I had done during night. And I also didn't mention it.
so sounds amazing. But I mean, somehow, you seem to be a genius. It worked out for you.
Oh, yeah. But I have to say, that worked during that time. I think it's definitely impossible to do it in our days.
We had a video conversation before this. You look healthy and fresh, and somehow it didn't harm you in the long term.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, thanks God.
But yeah, going on from there, you were, I think another head of yours were also the simulation part, the professional flight simulation role.
Yeah, I started really very early with that in the mid-70s. I think I'm one of the oldest guys on our globe now being continuously active on flight simulators. I started with the old Link Trainer. That was a wooden box turning about all three axes. Quite complicated to handle that. And if you tell it today, no one would believe it. I was instructor for instrument flying, and I even did my instrument rating myself. I ordered some books from United States because there was nothing existing in Austria. So I was studying some books, how to fly IFR, and there was also no license required to handle that simulator. And I was acting in a flight school. Students came, I told them how to fly IFR, even without having no IFR license. And yeah, they succeeded. Some of them became captain within flag carrier, Austrian Airlines. They already retired, and was really a funny part. And I saw the development of all that flight simulators from that early Second World War wooden box until that modern flight simulators with all that glass cockpit and flight instructor station where you can select everything. It was really an amazing development.
I mean, looking back on all those roles, was there some really amazing story to share on a podcast, maybe simulator or real life? I mean, they're all amazing story, but really one or two highlights that stick out for you, Gerhard. So, you know, to have some storytelling. I mean, the whole podcast was amazing, just amazing. But was there something you want to share?
Yeah, one of my most intense experience was the action as the manager rescue operations when we had that accident of the Hapag-Lloyd Airbus. And it started not very intense. The guys came to my office and say, "Hey, boss, we just got the information from ATC Tower that an Airbus from Hapag-Lloyd is doing a diversion landing in Vienna." The aircraft was on tour, departed from the Greek island Kania, and the destination was Hanover. And after takeoff from Kania, he couldn't retract the landing gear. So he had too much resistance, had to fly at a lower altitude with the gear down. So, the fuel consumption was too high. And then the captain decided to do a fuel stop at Vienna Airport.
Yeah.
And about 25 minutes before he came to Vienna, he declared Mayday. So we did the standard procedure, alarm, first step. We came out with our fire brigade, and I also drove out. It was July year 2000, we'll never forget. And then I was looking with my binoculars to the aircraft. It was on a long final on runway 34. And I was also listening to the ATC communication.
Yeah.
And when I looked to that aircraft, I saw some crazy movement. The aircraft was pitching and banking, and I asked myself, what's going on with them? And then I heard, and I will never forget, I heard in the radio when the crew reported, "We have both engines flame out." Mm-hmm. I said, "Oh, holy shit. We'll see what happens." I raised the alarm level to the next level, And then the only thing we could do is just wait. I was on the holding point, runway 34. And initially the aircraft came in on the 3 degrees glide slope. But it lost speed, so it pitched up more and more. And then the aircraft sank below the glide slope. It could barely manage to cross the fence into the airport area. And then he had a hard touchdown at 600 meters in front of the threshold. During that touchdown, he lost the left main gear. And that was the reason the aircraft skidded to the left. And it skidded toward to me, and it was unbelievable. That was definitely an impression for my life, because having a big aircraft skidding towards to you in a cloud of dust, at the end it was like in a slow motion. I was pulling back, because otherwise the aircraft would have hit my car. And then the aircraft came to a standstill, the slides came up, and the people evacuated.
Certainly, I read about this, but listening to you, I was just on the top of my toes here. This must be, to be up front there must have been for you, it's really some to say, it was almost a miracle. Nothing more happened. I read about it. It's somehow, I think, sort of kind of an aviation miracle.
Yeah, it was, I would say it was a perfect accident. First of all, no one was killed and no one had severe injury. We had around 20 people that had some injuries because of the evacuation, but that was not that serious. The aircraft was within the fence of the airport, so we had no spectators and no, I would say, accident tourists around the wreckage. It was well protected. It was beside a paved area, so all the rescue vehicles were able to get close to the wreckage. And and there was also no risk of fire, because there was no fuel in the aircraft.
But it was, and as I said, a story, I think, for you, as well as also for the listeners of this podcast, I guess, it was, I stay at the, so to say, aviation miracle.
Oh, yeah. But immediately after the accident, I had second heads. Because I was the manager airport operations and also the manager rescue operations. So having seen that the aircraft had no abrupt stop, so I was thinking about, okay, that couldn't be that serious. And I had all the fire brigades there, and I shut it down the whole airport, which I didn't do that often in my whole career. I did it only 3 times. And so the next thinking was, okay, when we do not have serious injuries, what's about to reopen at least one runway? Because you can imagine, I had stopped all the traffic. The aircrafts were waiting on ground for the departure. We had aircrafts in the holding waiting for a landing. To reopen just one runway, I had to figure out about the risk of that and how many fire brigades I need, because for reopening a runway I need a minimum staff of fire brigade to be able to reach any point of that area within 180 seconds. And I had all the fire brigade around the wreckage. So I had to assess what fire risk is involved with that Airbus, and I was waiting to get in contact with the crew. But everyone was evacuating except the crew. So I saw the 2 guys sitting from outside in the cockpit. And I said, okay, I have to go inside to ask the captain how much fuel is on board. Okay, the assumption was there is no fuel, but you have no idea. Maybe there is a spare tank and he couldn't use it because of a damaged pump, etc., etc. So I had to make sure that there is no fuel on board to remove the number of fire brigades for the reopening of the other runway. So I entered the aircraft from the rear. I went up because the aircraft was up there with a nose-up attitude because of the missing left main gear. Went into the cockpit. The two guys were still in. One was phoning with his headquarters. The other one was writing the logbook. I introduced myself. I said, okay, I'm Gerhard Gruber, manager rescue operations. Please could you tell me how much fuel you have on board? The captain was not that funny about that question, yeah, because in front of him, he had the fuel indicators. Every fuel indicator was showing zero. And yeah, he was quite angry to me and he told me, we have no fuel. Why do you think we are here? I said, okay, many thanks, captain. That's everything I want to know. Went out of the aircraft, went to my fire chief and say, okay, there is not that much risk with that aircraft. So you could reduce the number of staff for the reopening of the other runway. And at the end, we had only less than half an hour a total closure of the airport. So at least with one runway, we could manage with limited capacity the airport.
And Gerhard, if I have this right here on your CV, you are still a member of the European Advisory Committee of Flight Safety Foundation. And yeah, you're running your own business or your own company. You also, you're still wearing a lot of hats in aviation.
Looking to Flight Safety Foundation, I was with them quite intensively. I am not a member anymore because that stopped at 2019 when I left Vienna Airport. And also with the other organization, I had quite a busy role with ACI. I have to mention, no one knows ACI. Everyone knows IATA. That's the organization for the airlines. ACI, it's called Airports Council International. That's even bigger because that's the airport organization, and all that 4,000 member airports are member in that organization. I was working in the European Committee as a chairman, was working in the World Committee, and working for the World Committee, this committee is producing a lot of manuals, and one of the manuals, I'm very proud of it because I did it. That's the manual of surface markings and signs. That manual harmonizes all the markings on aprons because ICAO and EASA has only a standard for runways and taxiways. There is nothing in their regulations for aprons. So looking back, the markings on aprons was more or less a global painting competition. Everyone had its own ideas about colors, about shapes, etc., etc. And as a pilot, you had to adapt to the different markings from airport to airports. And yeah, then we concluded in the World Committee of ACI that I will take over the lead of creating a, let's say, standard or at least recommended practice. And I'm really very proud of it because when I look now on Google Earth, I can see on 99% of all that global 4,000 airports, they all have my markings I created. And yeah, I'm also happy about when I disembark an aircraft as a passenger or when I flew as a pilot, when I saw my surface markings.
Gerhard, I was just smiling because the sentence I just quoted, this was a part of your homepage, but I think there are a few people on planet Earth who got better, so much, you got so much better things to do than to update the homepage. But 2026, to get, so to say, back to the beginnings of the interview, is for you still, you're busy like hell. You do, so to say, something along the lines was the beginning of our interview.
Oh, yeah. Presently, I'm working on two projects, writing books. One is the Volume 3 of the, in German, Unglaubliche Luftfahrtgeschichten, in English, Amazing Aviation Stories. The book will be published mid or end of summer this year, with another 100 unbelievable aviation stories. And the second project is a big project, because I'm doing research and collecting every information about that former airline Montana Austria. They had three Boeing 707 end of the 70s until 1981. And it's really amazing how they operated. And doing research for all that what happened. By the way, Montana Austria was involved in Houston, Texas, in the biggest smuggling of weapons they ever had in the United States. And that alone is a big story.
I think we could cover also content for 10 podcasts here. Is so
yeah, maybe.
My gut feeling here. But I am thankful for every second you spent here with me, Gerhard. And coming towards the end of this podcast, I mean, looking at aviation today in 2026 and at young people who are inspired by this profession, like you were back then, what should they realistically understand about an aviation career in general, and what would you personally consider essential for long-term success and fulfillment in aviation, Gerhard? I know a big question, but overall, what's your takeaway?
I think, first of all, each had to ask himself, is the aviation enthusiasm big enough? If yes, okay, then go on and do everything you can do, and never stop and never give up. But you also have to look to the pros and cons. Aviation is great, and you have the best office you can have on this globe, sitting in a cockpit and looking down to sea and land, flying around with your colleagues, interesting customers. That is really great. But also think about the cons. If you have a family, you are not at home that much. I have countless concert cards as Ruhewey I bought, and I couldn't use it because I was somewhere in Moscow, Africa, or whatever. So you also have to consider that. If you have a family, especially in the business aviation, where you do not have a roster, it's much, much better if you fly for a big company, or the best is a flag carrier, where you have the protection of the union and so on.
So consider the pros and cons, consider the enthusiasm, and then decide from there.
Yeah. If you are enthusiastic, then do everything. Never ever give up.
Great words from a great aviator. Anything else you want to cover in the last minute here, Gerhard?
Yeah, it was also great being the pilot 15 years for Didi Mateschitz, for Red Bull. Yeah. We flew all to that special events. We did a round-the-globe tour. We flew to that Formula One races, air races with the Falcon 900. That was also an unbelievable experience. And I would stay in aviation as long as I can.
It would be great to have you maybe after your book has been published as a guest for a follow-up podcast. Would be my utmost honor. If you are interested, it would be great to have you here in a second part, because I think there are so many stories. As I said, I think 10 podcasts is everything but an exaggeration. It would be easy for you, content-wise.
Yeah, would be a pleasure to be again on your channel.
Thank you, Gerhard, for every second, and I wish you, a busy like hell day in Vienna.
Many thanks, Jürgen.
So that was the full interview. How was it for you, Jürgen? Did you enjoy?
It's still an afternoon. It's fresh in my mind. Yeah, as you know, Stefan, I'm a mental coach myself, and also was able to support, besides sports people, a couple of pilots. And for me, it was, I was struggling. It was, so to say, a cognitive overload, if I analyze myself, because especially the story with Hapag-Lloyd, this was too much. I mean, certainly also you have read about it. And by the way, it's also on Wikipedia. So everybody who wants to get into the detail, it's Hapag-Lloyd Flight 3378. And Stefan, I was on my limit. I recalibrated and I made it. I made it back to almost normal by the end of the interview. But I was really, really, it was like in a World Cup route. You know, when you struggle and somehow you recover and get back to the top. But I mean, I think this is also a reason why I am able to help others with sometimes also mental struggles, because I'm not immune to it. But this was really Jürgen Reis struggling in parts of the interview live on tape.
Yeah, there was a lot to take in, but super interesting, really interesting career, very interesting man. I unfortunately, I never had the pleasure to talk to him directly, but he sounds really nice, very open about everything, very honest. So, I think it was a great interview. I think you covered a lot of ground for someone who has had a very long and varied career. So, for me, it was great. I like listening to people like that, because they tell you their stories, and they are, like in this case especially, very, very... how can I put this? This is not a usual career of someone, you know, who just does
even,
one thing.
Even almost native speaker Stefan is struggling in the... No, just joking. Gerhard, you take everybody's words away.
Yeah, no, it was great. I really enjoyed it. I've listened to it twice now. Yeah. And even the second time, I still had a great time.
I think also you were certainly familiar with Hapag-Lloyd Flight 3378, but I guess Gerhard's version was also for you something special. Huh?
Yes, I was actually very familiar, because at that time I was based in Vienna, and the day after it happened, had a flight. I saw the aircraft lying in the grass. Okay. We took off from the other runway on the long-haul flight on an A330. And when we took off, we saw the aircraft lying there in the grass. Yeah. So, I am very familiar with what happened. I mean, when it happened, I had a day off. So I heard it in the news like everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, and Gerhard's books, whoever wants to, I hope a lot of listeners want to read more of his amazing aviation stories. That's the title of his books. It's Amazing Aviation Stories, Volume 1, My Adventures, and Amazing Aviation Stories, Volume 2, My Adventures. And as I said, his homepage is the go-to, and certainly they are also available in German. The title is Unglaubliche Luftfahrtgeschichten Band 1, Meine Erlebnisse, und Unglaubliche Luftfahrtgeschichten Band 2, Meine Erlebnisse. And I don't want to overpromise here, but maybe there will be even another interview, a follow-up interview with Gerhard because he is working on the third part of his, then it's a trilogy. And it would be great to talk about this trilogy or the third part of this, then it's a trilogy, in a follow-up interview. But well, as I said, it was for me. I had my homework afterwards. I was in contact with you, Stefan. By the way, you also brought up an interesting title for him. I found this really, really amazing and on the point. An aviation, what did you say? Aviation inspiring person or a mentor, or what was your term? You had even a better term. Help me out, Stefan. This was a ambassador. Ambassador was your word, wasn't it?
I think I called it an ambassador. Yeah. We can also call him a legend. I think he qualifies.
I can. Everything fits. with a life like this, I think it's almost. You can also find his CV, by the way, on his home. Besides the photos on his homepage, and I read it out one more time. It's photogruber.eu. As I said, Foxtrot Oscar Tango Oscar. Together with his family name, written in one word, .eu, so .eco uniform.
Yeah, we can put that in the description of the video so people can just find it there.
By the way, I finally made it. I forgot the YouTube video. This is the first time, but yeah, we have a YouTube channel and... Yeah. You can find us there. I mean, if you have watched it on the YouTube channel, you would just smile and say, hey, Jürgen, I already have seen the flight and I know what it's all about. But what's the flight today there? So the people see now the final approach, I guess.
Yeah, so it's very short, very simple today. We connect two of my favorite cities. We are flying from Singapore to Bangkok.
So it was a little bit a puzzle until now. You know, where is Stefan flying now?
Well, the YouTube people will always know, because at the beginning of each flight, they see the flight number, they see everything written down. So they already know exactly where we're going.
Exactly. This came to my mind. And all the listeners on Spotify or wherever you get the podcasts, we got a couple of platforms here. I can read it out. It's not only on Spotify. We are all over the place. We are on Apple Podcasts, YouTube Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Podcast Addict, Podigee. YouTube Podcasts is certainly your YouTube podcast platform. Thanks to your video, this is existent. And as I said, if you listen to the audio version and want to have some great flight simulator flying, created by FS Clips creator Stefan, going on, just visit our YouTube channel. And I'd say the homepage is the go-to. You find there all the links. And yeah, I think, Stefan, I hope Gerhard returns. And from my side, I mean, I just can say, Gerhard, thank you for the honor to be, to interview you, and all the best for the future for your projects. And as I said, maybe with a second interview even in 2026 here on Aviation Quest CC.
Yeah, that would be great. But you know, we'll leave it up to him. He's a very busy man. If he would come back, obviously we would be very happy about that. So yeah, also from my side, Jürgen, thank you so much for the interview, for your time. I know it always takes a lot of time for you to prepare and, you know, to get these people and have all the back and forth and stuff. So thank you so much for all the time you put into these things. And
emphasis with the invitation was certainly on the maybe, hopefully. And Stefan, it was an absolute honor to prepare for a man like this. And I already was, so to say, mentally overloaded, overprepared in the beginning of the interview, but it was, a CV like this, as you heard in the interview, it's just, it's too much. We could make 10 podcasts or 20 podcasts and still would have topics to cover. I mean, this is why he is already writing his third book. But one more time, Stefan, for your time. All the thank you. Also, enjoy your rest of the day, and we will, yeah, keep in the line afterwards. We will speak about episode 24, which is certainly online next Sunday afternoon around 2 o'clock Central European time.
Yes, exactly. So thank you, everybody, for listening. And as always, we look forward to seeing you in the next one. Until then, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Aviation Quest CC, Stories from Above. For more information about this episode and everything we do, visit our homepage, aviation-quest.cc. We appreciate your time and support, and we'd love to have you back for the next episode. Until then, stay safe, stay curious, and keep your passion for aviation flying high.